Hi and welcome to Visions. I am Yudeli Wickham Ashby, and quite often you would hear me say that we need to really focus a bit more, drill down a bit more into disability issues. And today I'm really pleased to have Frank, or as some of us would know him, Frederick Johnson, a parent of a young man with autism, to really dig a bit deeper and share quite candidly about being a father of a son with autism. Welcome to the program, Frank.
Great, thank you very much. And I've looked forward to being here since you invited me on Sunday. Thank you.
You're welcome. So, Frank, let's start, because you are not Barbadian by birth.
No, I'm English.
And you would have moved to Barbados. What would have prompted that move?
Well, I was in London one very cold day in February 1979, and I was strap hanging on a tube going into town, going to work, and I was trapped on a tube which was stuck on the rail somewhere, not going anywhere for a long time, and I thought, I can't do this anymore. And luckily, I looked in the press that day and I saw an ad for an architect's job in Barbados on a specific project. So I thought, that's for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I wrote away. In those days, you wrote away. You didn't call or you emailed. And about 6 months later, somebody wrote back to me and said, are you still interested? Because we are, if you are. And I went for an interview, got the job, and then 6 months after that, I actually got the work permit issued, and then I came out. So from first application to arriving in Barbados was 12 months.
Okay. And you've been here ever since?
Yes.
Okay, so how would you say Barbados has changed since you first came, 79, 80?
In a word, it's become noisier.
Mm-hmm.
I've noticed the traffic noise, sideways listening to traffic and people, airways as well. There's a lot more going on. It's a lot more energetic than it was in those days.
Okay. Right. So now we'll go into really talking about you being a dad, having a son with autism. So tell us about when you first came to Barbados. Were you single? Were you married?
I was single, and I met my wife, my future wife, out here, and she had interviewed me for CBC on the same job I was employed on.
Okay.
And the minister was visiting the site that day. It was the old Haywood site.
Mm-hmm.
And I was introduced to the party, and I was introduced to her, being one of the radio or TV interviews at that time. And that's how we met each other.
Okay. Right. So love blossomed and you had children.
Yes, we had two children. Oh, we have two children.
Great. So let's talk a bit about your son with autism, because he's a young man now.
Yes, he's 31, coming up to 32.
Mm-hmm. And when you first learned that your child had autism, what were the feelings by you and your wife?
Initially, complete puzzlement, because unless you deal with it every day, and unless you're perhaps a medical professional, so you know the term and know what it means, you really don't know anything about it. So straight away, for a start, most general practitioners are exactly that. They are general practitioners. So when you've been to the doctor and reported that the child is not meeting the developmental milestones which are expected of it, you suddenly begin to suspect that he's different in some way. So first of all, you notice a difference compared to the first child, my daughter. And then you of course, notice that he's late in developing speech. And then he's late in doing other things as well. But at the same time, he was incredibly well-behaved. He hardly ever cried. And socially, he was very easy to take care of. So it was a double puzzle. It wasn't as though he was crying or screaming his head off or just behaving really extremely in social situations. He was very good most of the time.
And after you learned then that he had autism, did you go up and read about it, or how did you and your wife cope with it?
Well, for a start, we didn't know what he had. And we found that the waiting times in Barbados and the advice we were able to get over the counter, so to speak, was not very good. So we were lucky enough to be able to afford to take him to London and get what they call a global medical assessment, which looked at his whole development. And after that, we were given the diagnosis that he was globally delayed. Now, that's a bit of a general statement. But leading on from that, about a year later, we also took him back again. And it was there and then that they said he was probably on the autistic spectrum, which, again, autism being a spectrum disability, you're never quite sure where you are on the spectrum. You just know that you are somewhere on it. And as the child develops, then you begin to get an idea of the scope and the range of his abilities.
And at what level of the spectrum would you say your son is?
He's at what I would call the middle range somewhere. He's neither in the extreme under capacity, or he's neither at the other end of the what we call the higher functioning. He is somewhere in the middle, and he's reached a position where I think he's quite happy with himself. He's quite a well-behaved and happy young man. And he does make developmental steps to mm-hmm. becoming more developed, okay. even at this age right now.
Frank, let's go back a bit. When you and your wife first learnt or discovered, really, that he had autism, and then having another child and just generally having to maintain your own relationship and care for children and do all the medical stuff and try to get them into school and so on, how would you say that impacted your relationship? Because I know from reading and also talking to other parents that sometimes it's really a very strenuous time for their relationships, and sometimes can even lead to breaking up of the relationship.
Yes, I think every family who has an autistic child is put under a tremendous amount of stress, and I've watched other people with their autistic children be affected in the same way that we were affected. And it certainly does affect your social relationships with your wife. It affects the way you get on with her and the way she gets on with you, because you constantly have a party in the house with you who is not developing in the same way as other children of other families, or indeed of your first child. So it's a complete mystery as to why this is happening. It's very frustrating to watch it happen. And at the same time, it provides you with a frustration as to mm-hmm. why this is happening. Mm-hmm. You do go through a phase of feeling quite guilty about it. I think that's a common feeling mm-hmm. amongst these families.
Yeah.
And you do feel also that perhaps it was your fault in terms of guilt,
or perhaps it was your
wife's fault. The commonly accepted cause right now is that it's somewhere DNA related, but it's so deeply buried, if you like, that there's no one way to discover why a child is growing up like this.
Mm-hmm. And for you personally, how did you cope with all those emotions of maybe some guilt, some questioning as to whether this was your fault, and whether you would have the fortitude to continue and raise your child in a way that you would want to see him grow and still be able to function within our society?
I think personally, it does affect you quite deeply. It did affect me very deeply in that the expectations, I think, of a father and a son are that the son should grow up to reflect the father, and that as the son grows up, the father sees himself reflected in the boy, and you are then able to guide him as to his thoughts and his actions and the way he mixes with other teenagers, perhaps as he goes through the teenage years. But all of a sudden, you realize that is not going to take place, and that you are going to be continually in a circling pattern, if you like, of arranging and taking care of a young man who is really not developing in what I call the classic ways. Luckily, it's good to have a second child as a standby, if you like, because the second child does give you a lot of reward and support as well. Siblings can be very helpful.
And as you grow older, Frank, and I know that this is another major concern for lots of parents and guardians who have young adults with disabilities, they often wonder, so what will happen to my child? Should I pass off before them? What are your thoughts about that?
I'm glad you mentioned that. This is one of the everlasting questions in the back of your head, which goes something like, if I'm not here tomorrow, what happens? Or if I'm not here in 10 years' time, what happens? You can try to plan for these things. You can start to make almost unsaid arrangements with the other child that he or she will be there for their brother. But at the same time, you would like to leave this world, as it were, with some kind of reassurance that something is in place. On the other hand, there's a lot of autistic children who do grow up into adults, and they are able to look after themselves to a certain lesser or more degree. And in that case, you would like to think that there would be what we call sheltered accommodation, which comprises of supervisors who are able to provide a supervised overlook of the person so that they can achieve a certain amount of independence.
Explain to us a bit more what the supported housing accommodations would look like, because it might be a new concept for some people.
It is a new concept. In the UK, again, you only find these things out when you're in the situation of wanting to know. In the UK, they have what they call sheltered accommodation projects, if you like, which are there to look after mature people who are disabled, but they wish to have a certain amount of independence at the same time as being loosely looked after or loosely supervised. So they have somebody to overlook their shoulder in case they get into a situation which is a bit dangerous for them. But at the same time, they have independence. In the UK, there's a project in London called the Tower Project, which was started off by a Barbadian, if I'm not mistaken, from parentage from way back. And they have promoted and have worked out and have been quite successful in this project, whereby they look after quite a few teenagers and young adults and mature people. And they have a whole range of people who are given supervised independence, if you like.
And I know that this is one of the things that a lot of parents with children with disabilities would want to see materialized in Barbados, so that they can go to their maker feeling comfortable that, you know, their child is well cared for.
Well, yes, this is it. The old-fashioned way of doing things, of course, was to shuffle the child off to a sibling or an uncle or an aunt or a distant relative, and they were very kind enough to look after the child. Yeah. But again, it's a very informal way of doing things.
Mm-hmm. And even in Barbados, you will, if no relative is willing to care for the child, for the young adult, then they will probably end up in the geriatric hospital, the psychiatric hospital, or just, you know, languish at home.
That's the problem. Mm-hmm. It's right now, it's a rather all or nothing situation, mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And it shouldn't be like that. If other countries can do this, why can't we?
Of course. Okay, so Frank, then let's look at how parents could probably look at facilitating some of the needs of their adult children with disabilities. I know that I have read about insurance companies and other financial institutions working with the parents to develop some type of saving plan.
Well, there's lots of ways to do this. And as I was talking to you on our way home on Sunday, if you tell me that there's a population in Barbados of so many thousand people who are disabled, then surely that is a market for an investment product of some kind, whether it's an insurance arrangement or whether it's a public-private arrangement between government agencies and private insurance bodies, mm-hmm. to be able to put money aside for a fund for the child as they grow older,
yeah.
to not only house them, but also to care for them and also to provide continuing education. Because mm-hmm. continuing education is the key.
Correct.
They do develop, but at a much slower rate than other people, and at different rates for different people, for different autistic people.
Mm-hmm.
And it's that which shouldn't be written off. The idea that you finish your education at 18, whether or not you are disabled or whether you are ordinarily abled, should not be so.
I know from my own readings, Frank, that in Canada and US, the government actually provides a lump sum of money to start a saving plan for the young adult with a disability. And then they're expected to build on that. You know, so I'm thinking this is something that can be done in Barbados as well, to really help some of the families in supporting their children, particularly the adults with disabilities. And that funding can be used to pay rent, to purchase housing, continue their education, grocery shop, you know, some of the essentials of life.
Yes, and the other way to look at it is like this as well. If you have carers who are trained to look after all sorts of disabled people, why can't carers be established as a profession in itself so that those carers can also earn money, they can also pay taxes, they can also contribute to the economy in all sorts of different ways. Their money goes back into the economy when they spend it. So straight away you have a service provided and a service which is directly aimed to those people who can't take care of themselves as they grow older. In addition to that, it's the parents as they grow older who are in a very difficult position. We all grow older and we are still looking after people at this age in our 60s and 70s. And it gets to the point where you feel extremely tired sometimes, and to have the presence and the help and the skilled assistance of a caring person to come in and help you with your ward, it would be a great cheering help.
Yeah, definitely. And as I also read and actually spoke to individuals in Trinidad, the government there, they established legislation to facilitate the payment, a monthly allowance for caregivers, whether it's a parent, a sibling, or just a friend or neighbor,
well,
to receive.
You've hit the nail on the head, because you have a household which, if the mother and father are working, that's okay, but there's a person in the house who is not working, but they are consuming. And straight away your income is being stretched
yes,
over the place.
Definitely. Right. So, Frank, let's kind of switch back now too. We've been doing a bit of switching today. But let's look at what are some of your personal goals for your son, and how do you think he will be able to achieve these?
Well, you get to know your son very well. You get to know his interests, his dislikes, in far, far more deeper ways than you would that of a normal person. And in that respect, you can see the way he's developing and what he would like to do. Sometimes he comes up with ideas which don't quite make any sense, of course. But other ideas he does come up with. He was in the car with me last week, and he said he would like to drive a grass-cutting tractor, one of these very small vehicles which are dedicated to cutting the grass of large lawns. Now, that's a skill he partially learned at the Derek Smith School when he was there about 3 or 4 years ago now. And he was able to demonstrate that he had fine motor control and judgment of the vehicle. Now, in that respect, it may tell you that he's capable of doing a job like that. On the other hand, he would have to be looked after in the handling of money, any money earned from it, if the parent wasn't around, really does have to be taken care of. He doesn't understand money. He can't decide whether or not to give a $20 bill or a $5 bill to buy a $4 packet of popcorn. So he definitely has abilities to do things and to go out there and earn some kind of income and give himself a measure of achievement, which he will feel.
Right.
But at the same time, there's other things which have to be looked after alongside of that. So I do think he has the potential to earn, to hold down a job. And I think he would enjoy the camaraderie of other people, which you have during a job as well. And that is one of the benefits of being employed and doing something, because you do mix with other people. And there's nothing wrong with meeting other people who are normally abled, because that does them good, does both sides good.
And Frank, as you say that, I'm thinking how feelings of isolation and disappointment can easily set in when you think of your son and his not being currently employed, and the challenges of becoming employed, and even at a more personal level, how will he or any other young adult with autism or learning disabilities or any type of disability become romantically involved? And I know that, again, this is one of those areas that we don't generally discuss, but our parents and even us as individuals with disabilities agonize about.
I think agonize is the word. The attractiveness of the other sex does happen to autistic boys as it does to autistic girls. The issues we run up against, the issues that I run up against in dealing with these things with Zachary, I'm not quite sure if dealing is the right word. But in watching and experiencing his interest is quite a strain. It's quite a strain on me. It's a strain on him as well. He sometimes reminds me of an older teenager who has a crush on somebody. And it's a crush he can't explain. He can't put it into words. But I know that he has a crush because he constantly refers to the person he would like to talk to, mm-hmm. and like to sit next to,
right.
and like to go to the cinema with. He does keep on this all the time. And it's very interesting the way it develops. Well, I can say as well that I try to deal with it as a father in the way of trying to guide him and trying to be kind, as it were, in saying that sometimes this happens to us. Sometimes men get disliked by women, and it's as simple as that.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I have to say that sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't work. Sometimes your likeness is returned, sometimes it isn't. And if somebody doesn't return a phone call or a text or an email, then you just have to bear your way through it. And if I explain it to him in broad terms like that, I try to hold my tongue, as it were, and cross my fingers behind my back that the message is getting through.
Right.
But it is difficult because I can see him manipulating these ideas in his head. He doesn't actually get to the point where I would feel comfortable that he's understood. But I'm getting some kind of message across.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Right. So, Frank, we can go on and on this topic and other topics relating to young adults with disabilities from the perspective of a parent, particularly a father, because men experience things so far, so much different to women. And as we wind down, what would be your final thoughts that you would want to share to encourage other parents of children, particularly those who have children with autism, who can, as you said, be at the either end, either mild or severe, and of course some will be moderate, and sometimes they feel as though they're pulling out their hair trying to find solutions and really help their young adults to be comfortable and at the same time exercise great control over themselves and their behaviors.
Well, I think quickly, I know we're running out of time, but I think first of all, don't feel guilty about it. It's happened, you have to deal with it. If you feel frustrated, do something about it. The best way to do something about it is to talk to other people, talk to other parents, talk to other parents who have got normal children as well as disabled children, and read as much as you can, find out as much as you can about your child and the way that he or she will develop, and take comfort in the fact that, and I hate to say this, but there are other children out there who are in a worse situation than your child may be. And if that's the case, then it gives you the opportunity to think, hey, I'm doing okay. I'm doing not bad for the pressures that I'm under. And if I can just keep going, then I can get somewhere. Most of all, talk, and possibly also talk to a counselor in person on your own or with your wife. It does help. It's a difficult chat that you're going to have, but you will find that it does release the pressure that you are under, and it can get to be quite immense, believe me.
And they can reach out to you as president of the Autism Association of Barbados. You want to share your telephone numbers or other contact information?
Yes. If you want to call me direct, it's 256-2868. My home number is 228-9054. You can join the Autism Association, where we do talk about these things. We have forums for men and for women separately, because men and women talk about these things very differently to each other, as mm-hmm. well as differently from their spouses or their partners. And you can join the Autism Association by getting in touch with the Barbados Council for the Disabled. They have application forms. And we have regular meetings about once a month or once every 6 weeks, depending upon when we can meet.
Great. Well, you have been listening to Visions with me, Yudeli Wickham Ashby, and my honored guest today, Frederick Frank Johnson, president of the Autism Association of Barbados and the father of a young adult with autism. Remember, Today, I want to say thanks to my technical operator, David Johnson. And you remember, you can contact me on 1246-430-7300 via Starcom. Or you can WhatsApp me or call me on the mobile phone on 1246-269-9660. And you can email me at visionsbarbados@gmail.com. That is visionsbarbados@gmail.com. So until next week, when we meet again, do enjoy.